This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
I have no idea why any of you are here. Well, actually, no. I see a couple of you and know you're here just to satisfy your curiosity of what I'm going to talk about. But a big question on my mind right now is, why are you here? Why did you come to this talk? Partly because I was in Rick Rhodes' breakouts on communication yesterday, and he pointed out that a big part of what makes a good presentation is connecting to your audience, and that means knowing who they are, what they need, and why they need it. I started wondering, well, what kind of people are going to come to a breakout titled Fish or Fishermen? And last night then, after listening to Rick, I started chopping up all the notes I had and building what I wanted to present. So I've decided we're going to spend 30 minutes of me getting to know you. Then we'll let you talk among yourselves for about 10 minutes while I prepare a talk and then give you about a 5-minute talk. That's about how it should work, I think. Then I'll know who I'm talking to and why and what about. Actually, I don't think that will work. So, what I'm going to do instead is show you a screenshot of the most beautiful website in the world, and then I'm going to tell you a story. After that, then, I'm going to try to give you a basic toolbox to help you build what I would call basic tech hygiene, good practices in what you're doing in your day-to-day use of technology, which is a bigger deal now than it used to be because all of you use technology a lot more than a few generations ago. So, the most beautiful website in the world is this one. Probably most of you don't think so, and I don't blame you. The reason it's the most beautiful website in the world is, and I realize later my laser doesn't actually shine on the screen here. Right in here, it says, run decryption software and enter your personal key. This. So, the uh-oh moment. Who here has heard the term ransomware? Okay. So, the story I'm going to tell you is about a cold December night, I think it was about 7 years ago, when I got to have a little ransomware adventure. And in my years of IT work as an occupation and a little bit of consulting, I've run into ransomware 3 times in a real way. And only one of the times is really, truly disruptive. And ransomware, of course, is when somebody gets into your system and locks stuff up and says, pay us money if you want to unlock it. Yeah, I think it was about 7 years ago, a nice cold December night. I got a call from someone at the office who went into work late and said, we have a problem. And so they explained what they were seeing. I started getting a very bad feeling in the pit of my stomach and told them some things I wanted them to look for on some of the workstations there, and then tried to connect to the office. I had just gotten home from work. I was getting ready to sit down for supper, and tried to connect to the office and found some things that scared me. So I hopped in the car and headed back. And on the road, I got a phone call from the supervisor who had called, and he had found the workstation that the attack had come in through. And so the first thing I did when I got to work was go to the server room and start loading a backup. And I was going to make sure that we had a nice backup of all of our important files from the servers. And there was the next uh-oh moment. The backups kept failing to restore. And so figured out enough to realize that what had happened was the backups that were attached to the network had been corrupted by the same software that locked all the active files. And the most recent offline backup was a week old. And you get enough people working every day for a week, that is a lot of value you will lose if you go back a week to rebuild from. And so I realized I'm probably going to pay a ransom tonight. And this was 7 years ago, ransomware, there was a better class of criminal in those days. Ransomware, for the most part, was pretty reliable. If they said, we want this much, and you paid it, you got your stuff back. That's a little less the case these days. But in those days, it was pretty much, if they said they wanted this much money and you were willing to pay it, you would get back everything you had lost. So I realized I'm going to pay a ransom because that is cheaper, and it was not a huge ransom. That is cheaper than trying to rebuild a week's worth of work for all these people. And yes, we did reevaluate and change how we did all our backups from that day forward. But this isn't a discussion about backups today. It was a bit of a crazy night. So it turns out, at least then, you couldn't just go online and put in a credit card and buy some Bitcoin to pay your ransom. I thought you could, and websites told me I could, and then I would start signing up, and they would say things like, well, you need to validate your account, and so send us a video of you holding, well, first it was, how was it? Oh, yeah, you can buy Bitcoin with Visa, MasterCard, or Discover. Ah, just what I need. And then I put in, we need to authenticate who you are. What state are you in? Virginia. We don't work with Virginia. So then you start Googling, buy Bitcoin with credit card in Virginia. And then, okay, here's one. We work with Virginia. And went through the process with a couple of them. And the one that was the most reasonable was, well, send us a video in daylight outdoors of you holding your Virginia driver's license beside your face and turn it around so we can see the other side, and within 48 hours we'll authenticate your account and then you can buy Bitcoin. Well, that's not really what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to get people working tomorrow morning when they show up. And so I remembered a friend who had done some Bitcoin mining. So I called him up at 10:30 at night or something. We hadn't talked in months. And I said, do you have any Bitcoin? He said, no, I liquidated it. And I said, well, are you on any exchanges? He said, no, I just mined it. I never bought any with real money. So, well, he wasn't very helpful. He said, well, go on the dark web. Well, I don't. I'm a good little Mennonite boy. What do I know about the dark web? So I grabbed the supervisor who had called me and said, you sit here because I don't know what I'm going to see, but I want to witness to it. Part of my concern was I was working for an organization that had a bigger bank account than me, and I didn't want to tip off anybody involved in the ransoming side that they had a big organization on the hook rather than just some guy with a lot of files. And so I was using a virtual machine on my personal laptop hooked up to a hotspot. We weren't connecting from the corporate network. I was trying to use my own credit card and my own ID to authenticate and buy Bitcoin because I didn't want... There was already some movement toward, I'll say a hospital would get ransomed and they know this is really important. So instead of asking for $1,000, you ask for, $1 million. And I didn't want any risk of anything like that. So we downloaded the Tor browser and we went onto the dark web. Ooh, nice, scary place. There's no Google for the dark web. So how do you even find where you're going to buy Bitcoin. And then I realized this is extremely stupid. I have no idea what I'm doing on the dark web, no idea where I'm going, and I'm thinking about finding somewhere that just lets me type a credit card in. And this isn't going to work. And I remembered a podcast I had listened to earlier in that year that talked about ransomware. And they talked about how this one person was really kind of going through the same struggle I was how do you even get Bitcoin, which Bitcoin's like real money, just with more math. How do you get Bitcoin to pay this ransom? And this person found out, well, there's a Bitcoin ATM in Brooklyn. And I thought, I think I know people in New York City. And so I thought, I'm going to see, is there still a Bitcoin ATM in Brooklyn? And so I went online and searched Bitcoin ATM, cash for Bitcoin. And it turns out there's one, at that point I think there was only one, now there's several in Northern Virginia. So I headed to, I grabbed the supervisor who had called me, and then a friend of ours who lived close by, and said we're taking a road trip to Fairfax to buy some Bitcoin. So walked into a seedy little gas station right on Route 50 in Fairfax, and sure enough, there's a Bitcoin ATM, first time I'd ever seen one. And their website said, takes credit cards, and got to the ATM and shoved my card in, and it said, cash only. So we all pulled out our bags and were digging through, and we had, you know, maybe $80 in cash. And so now the phone comes out, where's my closest bank branch? And I went to the bank, got as much cash as the ATM would get me, and we pulled together all the money we had in our bags and whatnot, and bought Bitcoin. And it gave me a little, you know, it turned money into math. Gave me a little QR code, said, here's your paper Bitcoin wallet. And so then we found an IHOP, because it was by now like 11:30 at night. And we hadn't quite crossed midnight, because later we realized my bank ATM reset, and if we need to get more money, we can go back to the ATM for more money, because now I can pull another 800 or whatever my limit was. So we went to an IHOP because they were the only place open near there. And so I sat down and started figuring out, how do I convert this, what I got out of the ATM, to something I can send to these people in Russia so that they can give me my files back. And I started there in the parking lot yet, and they said, we're hungry. So we went to IHOP. And I don't think I put the picture in of us sitting around at IHOP, and they're just having a grand old time eating eggs and bacon, and I was there looking like I was going to puke. Figured it all out, got everything, transferred it, and then it said, this is not enough money, because the exchange rates from when the ransomware attack happened and how much cash I had and how much Bitcoin I bought. And anyway, I was short. And there was a friendly, I can't remember, on the screenshot it may even be there, support, yes. So when you're ransomed, they give you a help desk. So if you have trouble paying them, you can figure out how to do so. And so I contacted support and said, I tried to give you the money. Here were the exchange rates. I submitted it in this amount. I don't have the cash or the Bitcoin right now to fix this. What next? And then is when I was just waiting and waiting and waiting, and then realized I need more money, and I realized my laptop was dying of its battery was dying, so we ran to Walmart, and I was in line at Walmart with a car charger for my laptop, and found out while standing in line, I checked in on the, I realized, hey, I can get cash back too. So now I don't even have to go back to the ATM to get more money if I need to buy more Bitcoin. And pulled up, connected on my phone to the infected workstation, and saw, here's your key. It's just, Well, then we spent the next 8 hours or so dealing with decrypting, wiping that workstation out, and all the aftermath of it. That's an interesting story, but what does it have to do with you? So, how how the ransomware happened is where this connects to you. If you can work on something, you can ruin it. So, if you have access to the files on your company server, your organization server, your own computer, then you can ruin them. And you are the easiest exploit. So, what do I mean by that? Actually, let me ask this. Raise of hands, who here knows what phishing is? It's not up there. P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. Phishing. Okay. So, phishing is, well, it's a bait and switch. It's I tell you one thing and get you in the door and do something else. I realized after the fact I should have made my title for this workshop something super fascinating and interesting. And then when you showed up, said, well, actually, I'm here to tell you about, you need to do better about your personal digital security. Because that would be phishing. I'd get you in the door with, you know, come learn how to make, make $1 million in donations for your organization this week. And then when you show up, I say, well, actually, I'm here to tell you about how to secure your digital environment. You were the easiest exploit. And what I mean by that is, okay, and I realize we've got a wide swath of people here, different interests, different backgrounds, different understandings. So some of you are going to get bored by what I say. You're going to say, I know that. Well, there was somebody over here somewhere earlier I heard was explaining that rather than hitting Control-Alt-Delete to get to your task manager, it's faster to hit Control-Shift-Escape. And I'm like, okay, that guy is not going to learn anything from me today. But what I'm hoping is, if you hear things and you're like, well, I know that, I'm hoping it's packaged in a way that you can go out of here and be an ambassador to your friends, your family, your coworkers, to be able to help them with bite-sized chunks of ways they can improve, ways they can help themselves avoid problems. So if you get bored by, I know this, think about, how can I pass this on to people who need to hear it? All right. You are the easiest exploit. 50% of large enterprises spend over $1 million a year on their cybersecurity. I don't think any of the organizations here would be of the size considered large enterprises. I couldn't find any stats I could make sense of anyway on, say, how much of Microsoft's engineering budget goes into security, or Google or Amazon or any of the big cloud players. But they put a lot of their money into securing their products. I was thinking last night, if we had an organization with 40 endpoints in it and we were going to have a good next-generation firewall and VPN, and you're going to have managed threat protection, you're going to spend probably between 10 and 15 grand a year for that. So you got an organization, 40 people, you're going to spend 10 to 15 grand a year probably on just some of your basic security tools to protect your organization. Has anybody here received $15,000 worth of security training in the last year? Okay. So, it's much easier to exploit you than to go head-on against the places that are hardened, the things that are hardened. It's a lot easier to hack you than to hack a system. So, you're the easiest exploit. If I can get you to ruin your own stuff, why do I need to get access to your system directly? Because if you have the ability to edit a file because you need that to do your job, you have the ability to delete that file, right? Or to lock it up with ransomware. If you want a good book, I didn't put it on my notes for Faith Builders because I figured they're not going to want to stock it out in their bookstore out there. If you want a good book about social engineering, which is what the term is for hacking people, social engineering, read Ghost in the Wires by Kevin Mitnick. He was at one point, I think, the FBI's most wanted domestic person because of how he was definitely their most wanted cybersecurity threat. Fascinating to see. He does consulting now, fascinating to see how he exploits people, how he hacks people. If you can work on it, you can ruin it. You have to have access to all the files you need to work with. I'm going to paint with a broad brush. I'm happy to engage later with questions about technical solutions, controlled folder access, that type of a thing. But we're going to be considering the human problem more than the technical problem. And so we're going to be looking at more the human tools available to us. The short version, remember that if the exploit and flaw is humanity or human nature, if you try to make a technical fix for that, you're going to end up handcuffing your users or your device to where it's hardly usable. If you're trying to make a technical solution to a human problem, you're just going to lock down the device to where it's not usable. So that's why I'm saying deal with the human part. You're the exploit. The biggest tool in your bag to deal with social engineering is this. Always reach out. If you remember nothing about this discussion other than some guys went on a road trip and bought Bitcoin in the middle of the night one time, remember this. Always reach out. The other way to think of that is never respond. That sounds good if you don't like answering your phone or... But what I mean by this, always reach out, never respond. So if someone calls you from your bank, so let's say, I'm not going to tell you who I actually bank with. I have a tinfoil hat in my car, a literal tinfoil hat my daughter made me, and I thought I might make an object lesson, but we're not going to use it. So let's say I use Wells Fargo for my banking. I get a call from someone that says, this is Wells Fargo. We have bad activity on your account, and we need you to deal with this. Can you give me your account number? Or can you give me even the last four digits of your social security number? What do you do? Okay, either I'm really running out of time or there are a bunch of noisy people out there. You do not give them any information. You say, thank you, and you hang up. Then, if you say thank you and they say, well, call, and say, I'm going to call the bank, and they try to give you a number, you say, no thanks, I have your number. You go to your bank's website, wellsfargo.com. I don't actually use Wells Fargo, but you go to wellsfargo.com, or you go to your bank statement, that if they're still sending you a paper statement, and you find the phone number and you call it. You do not respond when somebody asks you personal questions. You say, well, I'll reach out to the known organization. And this is if they say they're the IRS, they say they're the police, they say if they want information out of you, you say, thank you, I'll call your organization. And you hang up. You do not give them anything. This is the same if they call you, if they email you. Don't follow links you aren't expecting. If somebody sends you a link and you go, I don't know about this. Yeah, okay, if somebody sends you a link and you think, yeah, this really could be Joe sending me a Dropbox link, it's not the end of the world to click on the link and just go to the page. But as soon as it asks for any information from you, if it says, enter your username and password, okay, I'll show you a couple things you can look at in a browser in a moment to help figure out, is this really the site I think I'm on? But in general, if you go, wait a minute, I should have just gone to the file. Why is it asking me? Just close everything out. And if it was, say, a Dropbox link, go to your Dropbox account. Log in. Go to where you know the good information is and log in. And then, or if it's, let me go ahead and show this. If you're in an email and there's a link. So this one has this view your invoice link in it. This is a legitimate email. But you'll have ones that look like this that aren't. If I want to know, am I actually going to go where I think I'm going to go when I click that link, I can hover over it. And, of course, the screenshot took away my cursor. But I was hovering my little mouse finger over that. And then down here, I was in Gmail. Usually, I think it's Outlook makes it pop up right underneath the link. down here in the corner, it says, well, you're going to go to https://emails.azure.microsoft.com. So right away, if this said you're going to go to andrewsbargainbazaar.com, I would know, well, that's not a Microsoft invoice. So one thing is, if you hover over, you will see where is this actually going to take me. This was one that last fall I got into my junk mail and thought, oh, I've got to save this for Reach. It's a Facebook alert because why? The subject line says it's because, oh, did you log in on a new location? Well, Facebook will sometimes send you that saying, did you actually do this? But if I read the message, it says, no, your Facebook password's been changed. So the first thing to pay attention to is, does the email agree with itself? If I logged in from a new location and they're really trying to figure out, is he traveling and logging in from somewhere different, then both of these would say, you logged in from somewhere weird. Was this you or not? Or if it's, hey, your password changed, and we want to make sure this was you and you knew it, it would say, password change notification and password change notification. So the first clue, okay, here's a free design tip. Don't use exclamation points in your email title, like your name. Like, that is who it came from. FB alert! And so that right away, I said, well, this looks hokey. But let's say that just said Facebook support or something. See if the email makes sense. Does it flow logically? Then, if this said your Facebook account password was changed, your Facebook account was changed. If this was you, you can normally would say if this was you, you can ignore it. If this wasn't you, click here, something like that. If it looked more legit, I still wouldn't have clicked either of these. What I would have done was open my web browser and typed in facebook.com and tried to log in with the password I know is my password. And if it didn't work, then I would go through the whole password reset process. But I would never use the email they sent me to get there, because they're going to take me to a page that looks like Facebook, and then they're going to say, well, what was your old password? And then you type it in, and they have what's actually your current password, because nobody ever changed your password. So always go to the source. First, give it some an overview. Does this make sense? And if it actually made sense and didn't, disagree with itself already in the email, then you still don't follow the links. In general, if it's not something you're expecting to send you a link, don't click it. Same way if you get something saying somebody shared a file with you on OneDrive. I use OneDrive a lot. People share files with me a lot. And if I click it and it says, hey, you need to log in to see this, I'm not even going to bother digging through the little padlock and seeing, is this actually Microsoft's website? I'm just going to close it all. And then I'm going to go over to a browser I know. I'm going to go to OneDrive.com, and then I'm going to go into the Shared With Me section. And then I'll find if somebody actually shared something with me. Always go to what you know is the source of truth. Now, what if you're not sure if it's a source of truth, it's a site you haven't worked with much, whatever. One thing to note is padlock in a browser. Every browser now uses some sort of a padlock symbol for a secure connection. I should have had the slide now. If there's no padlock, never enter a password. If a site does not have a padlock on it, don't enter a password, period. Even if you really think you want what they're offering. No. But the other thing is, I went to Faith Builders' website and it said I was on faithbuilderseducationalprogram.org. Now, if you connected to the Wi-Fi here at Calvary Church, they can change where you land when you type in fbep.org. If I control your network, so I could turn on my hotspot right now, and change where you go when you type that in. For the nerds in the room, we're talking DNS. I can run a DNS server, and I can change where you go when you type in an address. What I can't change is the certificate on that site. I do not have a certificate for fbep.org, a security certificate. So if I put up a fake page, I cannot get a padlock and have it say fbep.org and have, when I click the padlock, it say, yes, this certificate, this lock, this security certificate was given to fbep.org. It would say it was given to John Perfect's reachdemonstration.sample.com or whatever I was using. So if you're not sure about a website, is this really what I think it is, make sure that what's in the bar matches what happens when you click the lock. And no lock, no password. Don't ever sign in to a password or into a site that doesn't have a padlock. That's not why we have these padlocks. We'll get to that in a moment. What people will often do, browsers often highlight it now, so reach.events, they highlight it as this is the core site that you're going to. What some people do in scams is they would go something like reach-events.wp-content.plugins.fastpress, and then way over here somewhere they would put .johnperfect.com. And so when you just glance at it, they've put all this garbage at the front of it. It looks like, oh, yeah, I'm going to reach.events, whatever. And what they've done is just put a bunch of garbage in front. Clicking that lock will tell you what is the core site I'm going to. The core site, and like I said, browsers often highlight it now, but the core site will say, no, this is what the certificate of the site is, fbep.org. So that's one way to see, am I on a real site? No padlock, no password. So if I ever make a website and tell everybody here at Reach, oh, you should come to my website, and then there's a place there to log in, and there's no padlock up there, you'll also see it's the HTTPS, S for secure. Don't log into it. Even if it's your best friend who built an awesome website, tell them, get a security certificate, and then I'll log in. One thing that just came out in the last couple days, an exploit, and I thought, oh, just in time for Reach. Sometimes you'll go to a website and it wants you to log in with another service. So instead of using, this is Canva.com, instead of using Canva, you can sign in with Facebook, Google, or something else, Apple. And you'll, PayPal will do that often. If you say check out with PayPal or pay with PayPal, it'll pop up this second little window in the middle of the screen that you log into with your credentials for that other site, because they don't want you to leave your what your main doing. They just need you to authenticate against that other site. That's fine. And you still have, here's the address I'm going to, accounts.google.com, looks good. I've got a padlock, I can click on it, and it'll say, yep, google.com is this, the site we're actually secured here. If you get one of these, starting as of about a week ago, this is your new best practice. If you get a pop-up that's saying you need to enter a password to another site, drag the box up and try to make it hover over top and block the address of the site you were on. So for example, here I'm on canva.com, this pops up. I'm going to drag this box up and see, can I cover up canva.com? And the reason you do that is there was a demonstration earlier this week. You can make what looks like this pop-up box, and you can fake what's in it because it's a part of the web page. It's not actually a new window, but it looks like the new window. But it has to stay inside the box. So if there's any question, this thing pops up, oh, this doesn't seem right, drag it up and see, can I hover it? Is it actually another layer? Is it a new window that I can pull up over top the others? Because if it is, then you can trust what you see when you click that lock. But, and I couldn't find a good demonstration to put in here, if it's one of the scams, it will actually just bump into the top of the window here, and you can't drag it up any higher. So anyway, that's one to watch for. If you get a pop-up, can you actually move it all the way to the top of the screen? And that's a good one for, you'll get messages saying, Microsoft has detected, 1,700... errors on your computer, and you need to call us at this number to get them fixed. First, that's a lie. Microsoft does not care. They're not monitoring your software for that. But secondly, it's the same kind of thing. You could try dragging that window up, and you'll see this is just the web page making a thing in the middle of it that looks like a new window. I realize that one could kind of fly over some people's heads. The main thing is if you get one of those pop-out boxes now, best practice to know that you can trust what you see when you read it and click on that lock is is it actually a free window that I can move anywhere I want, or does it get stuck inside the main window that I was already in? Okay, one password used in more than one place is crazy. I tried to come up with a nice catchy like single line to put here, and then I just came up with, sorry, this is just the root of it. One password used in more than one place is crazy. But it's an awesome password, right? You memorize 64 random characters, uppercase, lowercase, symbols, numbers. And because it's so awesome and you took all that work to memorize it, you're going to use it everywhere. That is insanity in the modern technical world. Now, I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands for who here uses the same password on multiple things. But, sorry, I saw someone scratching their head and thought they were going to raise their hand. And I was thinking, that's very brave. Why is that the case? Because I've said this to people and they've said, whatever. Which one of these locks would you rather try to pick? So, both of these locks have a key ring on them with two keys. One of these keys is for the clear lock, and one of the keys is on there, does the Brinks lock. So, which one of these, I didn't bring my lock picks along, I've gotten better about not carrying them everywhere after I accidentally tried taking them into a prison in my bag. they were not amused. Which one of these would you rather try getting into? This one is plastic. You can see the pins in there. Super easy to pick. That's what this lock is for. It's for learning how to pick locks. Or would you rather try to get into the Brinks lock? Nice. Nice lock. Once you practice on this, it's not too hard to get into this. But anyway, if my password is the same in two different places, as soon as I unlock this lock, I'm able to unlock this lock. Same keys. So what am I going to do? Am I going to attack this one, or am I going to attack this one? Do not use your password in more than one place. And an example of that would be if you have a account at fbep.org. Carlin is in charge of IT at FB. Good guy. He's also making sure the servers stay up. He's making sure people's workstations are working. And he's supposed to be making sure that things are staying secure. Over at Wells Fargo, the bank that I don't use, they have who knows how big of a staff that's dedicated to keep the website and the app secure. So, if I want to crack something, I'm not going to try cracking Wells Fargo. I'm going to try cracking Faith Builders. And then, as soon as I get into Faith Builders, I'm going to grab every email address and every password I can, and then I'm going to try them on Wells Fargo, Chase, Truist, Discover, eBay, Amazon. I'm going to try that same combination everywhere, because the chances are somebody in here has the same password. Okay. Has the same password for those two places. So all I had to do was crack open Faith Builder's website and get that information. And now I'm going to go over to eBay and buy myself something, because you used the same password. And eBay's got a great big cybersecurity team that they're paying lots of money every week. And Carlin is doing his very best with his limited staff and time. One password used in more than one place is crazy. Now, how do you deal with the fact that you've got a lot of logins that you need to manage? Use a password manager. So, don't try to remember your passwords. Use a password manager. And the way that works is it's a secure locker where you do have one password that then gives you access to all your other passwords. I use and recommend Bitwarden. It's a free one. You can use bitwarden.com. And I'll just say this now. I did not make a handout because I figured stuff's going to change too quickly, and I don't want you 3 years from now referencing a tech handout from today. You're welcome to take a business card. I put a page on my website called Stuff I Use, and I'm going to try to keep it updated with links for stuff like this. You're welcome to take one of these before you leave. It's johnperfect.com. Not too hard to remember. Bitwarden It's on every platform, Android, iOS, Mac, Windows, and it synchronizes. So you enter a password in one place, you can, on your phone, you can get to it on your computer, vice versa. You can also, even on the free plan, share with up to one other person. So you and your spouse could have two different accounts with some... I won't get into why you need to do that. Anyway, it's a possibility. So Bitwarden, you log in with one password, and then you have access to all your others. Now, what do you do about all your other sites? Use the password generator. So right there in Bitwarden, it will say, I can create a password for you. I like to use the, under the options, the phrase. And so you can say, how many words do I want? That type of a thing. And so I, for this one, I told it, I just set the defaults, I think, to 3 words, include a number somewhere, and capitalize the first letter. And so anytime it generates 3 random words. It puts a number with one of the words, and it's capitalizing each of them. So the nice thing about this is I can type this if I need to. If I don't have my password manager on a device, so like I'm on a computer at Faith Builders, and I need to log into something, I don't have my Bitwarden there necessarily, but I have it on my phone. So I can pull it out, and I'm not typing, 7 3 little g big g little h big y, like, no, I can type this if I need to. Plus, you'll find yourself remembering some of these if you type them very much, because you'll just start to build pictures in your head. There's a cartoon that explains this, that you just get pictures in your head of how these 3 words link together. Anyway, correcthorsebatterystaple.net is a website that will just generate that type of a thing for you. You can say, I want 4 words, minimum length this, that type of a thing. And it's an easy way if you're not using the password manager all the time to generate these types of things. It also has a link to the cartoon that explains why you should use random words instead of trying to remember random characters. Quickly, don't email sensitive info. Don't email credit card information. Don't email your social security number. CPAs. Any CPAs in the room? Okay. I have been appalled at how often it's CPAs that want you to do this. Because they need the information and just email it to me. Don't do it. Don't email sensitive info. And generally, what I'm talking about is don't email passwords, don't email credit card info, don't email social security numbers. And if somebody really wants you to, say no. You can do that nicely. And you can call them and give them the social security number over the phone, that type of a thing. And there are some secure services. If there were CPAs here, I was going to tell you, just sign up for ShareFile and use their secure submission options. Anyway, don't email sensitive information. Use another browser. I like the Brave browser. It does ad blocking and anti-tracking built in. It's built on the Chrome platform, and so it works with every site that works with Chrome, basically. But just the basic level of I don't have to think about it, but it has extra security features is really nice. If you're not using Chrome, install an ad blocker. Just go to adblockplus.org. That'll be linked on my website, and it will say, oh, you're in the Edge browser. Install it by clicking this button. It's amazing how much that will cut down on you being able to click on things you shouldn't. I'm going to touch for 30 seconds on fishermen, because I spent all this time on fish. I've run long here. I don't have the time to get into all my points. Here's the root of it. In your online interactions, are you constructive or destructive? If you blast into the comments section of YouTube or your friend or Weird Uncle's Facebook post or whatever, and you're in there to tear down their idea and what they're doing, I highly doubt you're there with the Spirit of Jesus. Don't be throwing Jesus or Scripture like a grenade over there to see, can I just blow up this nonsense that's going on? That is not salt and light. That is not grace and truth. Are you constructive or destructive in the way you interact online? Sorry, put all of it into fish instead of fishermen.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.